Let's take our Bibles this evening and let's go to the book of Job. It has been a couple of weeks since we have been in our Sunday evening series that we have entitled Trusting in Suffering. And so we continue, as we have mentioned to you, as we are highlighting our way through this book very quickly. And we've learned some things not only about Job himself, but we've also learned about his so-called friends and counselors during this time. And I think one of the things that we come away with, or one of the many things that we can learn from the book of Job, on one hand, is how not to do certain things. And we also learn that there are people all around us, from the time of Job onward, that are in need of someone to come alongside and to do or help as help in the work of the Holy Spirit. We do not take his job, but we certainly can assist him in his work as we would come alongside those who are hurting and those who need maybe simply not a word, but maybe even our company. For we've also learned within this particular book that the best counsel that these ones who were trying, maybe they were trying in their heart of hearts to help, and maybe they would say at the end of the day, you know, in our hearts we were trying to do what we were supposed to do, but we also know that the heart is deceitfully wicked, and who can know it? We cannot always rely on the heart itself. But these, we know that they gave their best counsel when they sat with him those many days and said not a word. And perhaps we learn also from that. We learn that Job is human. We learn that he is given over to despondency and perhaps even discouragement, and we find him at many times on the brink of despair. And I think that if we were honest with ourselves, we would admit that maybe we've been there ourselves. And there are those around us that are there in the scope of those words, from discouragement to depression to despair. And they are in that scope somewhere, sometimes. And maybe it's more so the people, more so than we think. And we've asked the Lord through this series, Lord, help us, or help me, to be more spiritually sensitive and aware of those who are hurting. Look, folks, let's just put it this way. We live in a world of hurting people. And they are all around us. And sometimes we are so wrapped up in all the things that we're doing and our schedules and our busyness of life, which is a part of life. We understand that. But yet we need to be aware of those around us who simply need a word, and they need a word of encouragement to get through that day. And what, by the way, what a better time of year to do that than this Christmas season. And of course, there are many who are busy about the season, and in the shopping centers and the stores, and so forth. There are many people who are, again, going about the business of Christmas, and it's supposed to be a time of joy, yet they don't seem very much like that, do they? And this is a prime opportunity for us to say, Lord, help me to be sensitive to those who need a word. Lord, help me to be a testimony. Lord, help me to be a channel and a guide and a light to those who need it this Christmas season. Folks, listen, I want to say this. They are all around you. And you need to understand that and be aware of that. I want you to go to Job chapter 29. Job chapter 29. So we're going way over toward the end of the book. And we're actually going to survey, as I said, this is that we're surveying these chapters and gleaning and gaining some of the things out of this book that we can use for this theme that we have of trusting in suffering. The world, again, is full of, as I say, hurting. It's As we heard in our Sunday school class this morning with Brother Lewis, it is conflict, and it is things that go on in the life that are difficult and hard. And everyone in this world of sin has or will experience those things. The children of Israel would, hundreds of years after this was written, they would experience those very things. And as one writer said, and I've never forgotten this as I read it, he said, and I never thought about it this way, he said, sometimes trusting is more difficult than obeying. And I think that that may be true. You know, we can, in our lives, if we really ponder that statement and that principle and that concept and idea, I think that you and I, we can relate to that because we can conform to a set of rules. That's not very difficult. If we put our mind to it, we can conform to rules. But trusting is a whole different matter. Now, isn't it interesting that as far as the children of Israel were concerned, and of course all of God's children for all time, God has wanted them to learn two things. And the children of Israel never got it. And that was trust and obey. That should have been that song that we sing that you sung since you were in grade school or in children's Sunday school. That song that sometimes maybe we think of it as a children's song, it certainly isn't. It's written for adults, and it's written for adults who haven't really quite conquered it yet. The children of Israel never learned those two concepts. And it was one of the things that our Lord wanted so badly for His children, His chosen, His elect, to learn. That they had to, yes, obey the commands, but they also needed to trust Him implicitly. And I think the latter is harder than the former. To obey, we can do that. We can, like I say, we can conform. Some of you used to do that when you were under your parents' authority and under their roof. Remember that? I'm talking to you adults now. You young people, I'll get you in a moment. Okay. All right. You remember those days. Mom and Dad would lay down the rules. You'd say, okay, all right, well, I really don't want to, but I guess I have to. Okay. You remember that? Did you ever do that? Okay, at least Dean did. Okay. All right. Every one of us did that. Okay. We conformed even though we didn't agree with it. Some of you young people are living through that right now. Okay. Well, I really don't want to do that. Okay. But you do it. Trust is a whole different matter. And the children of Israel had a problem trusting God. But we're commanded to trust Him. And again, I think that is one of the major themes that runs all through Scripture, is that when we can't see the end, when we can't see the result or how a certain matter in our life will ever be resolved, we have to retreat very quickly to the concept or the idea and the truth that God is there, God cares, God loves, and guess what? We have to trust Him. No matter what. No matter what comes our way. Job is learning this. And oh, how he would learn it through the most difficult circumstances that perhaps any human has had to endure. And he was going to learn things even further down the road here. These chapters are very interesting. Because we have finished the three rounds of so-called dialogue between Job and his critics. And now the critics have fallen silent. And for three chapters, at least for a period of time, for a moment, Job is alone, in a sense, he's alone with his God. And he's just talking to his Lord and his God. Now, after this, there's going to be another fourth one that pops up. Elihu. Elihu is what I call, again, some scholars disagree, some Bible teachers would disagree with me, but I call Elihu the young know-it-all whippersnapper. Okay. And Elihu comes on the scene, and again, much like the other ones, some of the things that he says may be correct, but not in the context in which he finds himself. And it was a way for him to basically say this. He was obviously younger, and he talks about that, and he says this. All of you are wrong. Job, you're wrong. And you know what? You three guys, you older guys, the reason I haven't said anything is because I was respecting you, but you know what? You're wrong too. And you need to listen to me because I'm young and I know everything. Okay, now I'm not picking on you young people, but let's face it, all of us growing up, we have thought the same thing at certain times. Now admit that too, okay? Be honest with me tonight, okay? I'm not just picking on the younger people because us older people, we went through the same thing. You went through the time where you thought, man, my parents, I just wish they knew something. Okay. You ever thought that? I guess I'm the only one. And you know what I'm finding out the older I get and the longer they're gone is how wise they really were.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think about that almost every day. But Elihu, again, we don't hear any more about him. And there are some scholars, like I say, who will say, well, that means that God wasn't as disappointed in him as he was the others, because we know that the other three are judged by God. They're condemned by him for their actions and for their words. He says nothing about Elihu, but I think Elihu was so far out of line that it is almost as if there's no use to even say anything. And so nothing is ever said. Be that as it may, the critics have fallen silent, and I have entitled this Moments with God. Moments with God, because here we find one of the few times, now he's going to, after Elihu finishes all of his dialogue, or all of his monologue, I should say, then again we find Job and God alone. But here's the first time that this happens, within the context of the rounds of speeches that have taken place. And it's a very interesting thing. And Job here, he pours out his heart to God and his emotion and his, yes, feelings. Pastor Greg, you think Christians have that? Yep, and they should. And I'll tell you why. Because whether we like it or not, folks, God created us with both. God created us with emotion and with feelings. And it is a mistake for us, when someone is going through turmoil or whatever it may be, to look at them and say, well, you know what? You just need to change your attitude. That's tough. And sometimes we are prone to do that. Now, that might be true in some cases. But one of the things that we need to understand and learn is that most of the time in that kind of setting, in a person is downtrodden, they're not where they maybe need to be. There may be times where we need to be that forward with somebody, but more often than not, what we need to do is encourage. And we need to accentuate the positive. Now, I'm not up here preaching Norman Vincent Peale, The Power of Positive Thinking. Okay. But we can learn from some of that. And look, my pastor used to say all the time, and he repeated this so often, he would say, your attitude determines your blessings. Well, that's true. But that also, look, that doesn't negate the fact that sometimes we're going to go through things and we're not going to feel very good. And there's going to be some, as I talked about in our last message a couple weeks ago, there's going to be some dark valleys that you're going to traverse and that I'm going to traverse, and the shepherd knows where they are and he knows why he's leading us through them. But what do we have to do? I'm coming back to this word. Trust. It's dark and ahead of me, I don't like what I see. I don't like the layout of the land. It's dark, it's hard, it's rough, it's difficult. But Lord, I'm going to trust you to get me through it. I don't know the path. I don't know the best steps to take. But I trust you to navigate me through it. And I'm going to hold your hand and you're going to hold mine. And we're going to make it through it together. And he will. Job's going to learn that. He's going to learn all these things. He's going to know more about his God than he ever did. And he had a great relationship before this. He is going to grow intensely in that relationship. And he is going to have a walk with God, again, that heretofore he never knew. And sometimes, again, that is exactly why God takes us through those dark things, is so that we will rest in him alone and implicitly. For otherwise we would not. So the critics have fallen silent. And by the way, critics, oftentimes who do not get their way, will oftentimes write you off. And they'll finally shut their mouths. And so the best response is to do as Job did. And by the way, what did we say? Job never really, if you look at it generally speaking, he never really directed any of his words towards them. He never did that. It was always him speaking to God. And so sometimes the best wisdom is not to take them on in debate, but rather give it over to the Lord and say, Lord, I can't do this. Lord, I can't solve this. Lord, I can't resolve these things. Lord, you're going to have to do it, and keep speaking to him and let him take care of it. Well, let's look at some things here tonight, as we said. There's three things that we're going to look at as we survey them. So if you're going to write these down, write quickly. The first of all, Job reflects on his past life in chapter 29. And I want to give you five things here real quick. I'm going to list them, and we may read a few verses here and there. But Job reflects on his past life. Now, again, let's keep in mind the context. Here's Job. They have fallen silent. It's just him and God. And I couldn't get away from this. Those moments with God where it's nobody else but us and him. And folks, you may find yourself, by the way, in that situation. If you go through the deep waters and the deep trials, it may be just you and him. What did we say last week or a couple of weeks ago? We said that Job was in this, for all intents and purposes, he was doing this, he was suffering through this alone. Now we don't know, now I will say this. His wife was too, but we don't have any record of her beyond the first couple of chapters. But she was suffering too. And maybe emotionally more intensely than he. However, we find that Job, going through these things, he begins to speak in this moment where it's just him and God. And sometimes, folks, that may be the case, and it's just you and him. Folks, look, don't get the idea that that's a negative. Because you have, when it's just you and God, you have the greatest friend of them all. And he sticks closer than a brother. He will not forsake you. He will never leave you. And if all of the friends give way, or all of the ones don't come to your aid, folks, you as a child of God still have your Savior who's right there. Don't forget that. That's not a negative. But he begins to reflect on his past. And number one, he reflects on the presence of God in his home. Look at verse 2. Well, let's just read verse 1. Job further continued his discourse and said, "Oh, that I were as in months past, as in the days when God watched over me, when His lamp shone upon my head, and when by His light I walked through darkness, just as I was in the days of my prime, when the friendly counsel of God was over my tent, when the Almighty was yet with me, when my children were around me, when my steps were bathed with cream, and the rock poured out rivers of oil for me. In other words, that he's using allusion there, or the objects there, to talk about things were pretty smooth. Okay. Oh, if they could be like that. And so the presence of God in his home and those great days as he reflected upon, he wished he could go back there, and he's not understanding why he is where he is. Number two, he reflects on the great respect from others in verses 7 down through verse 11. He says, when I went out to the gate by the city, when I took my seat in the open square, the young men saw me and hid. The aged rose and stood. The princes refrained from talking and put their hand on their mouth. And he goes on and he speaks of the great respect that he had from others. So we know that Job had some character about him. There was something to this man. And now all of that was taken away. Number three, he reflects on ministering to the needs of others. Now, isn't that interesting? Because what did we learn 2 weeks ago? Well, we learned that one of his critics got up and he began to speak and to accuse Job with unfounded accusations. And one of them was that he simply didn't care for anybody else. Very interesting. And Job reflects on that here. He says, because I delivered, verse 12, because I delivered the poor who cried out, the fatherless and the one who had no helper, the blessing of a perishing man came upon me, and I caused the widow's heart to sing for joy. And so he reflects on the fact that, look, I did those things. And there's a longing for the ability to do that again. And then he says, number four, in verses 18 through 20, he looks towards the days ahead. And we're going to look at that again in chapter 31. He's going to come back to this concept or this idea of the future days. In verse 18, then I said, I shall die in my nest and multiply my days in the sand. My root is spread to the waters, and the dew lies all night on my branch. My glory is fresh within me, and my bow is renewed in my hand. And then in verses 21 through 25, he reflects on the privilege of being able to counsel or minister again to others. The counseling of others. He said, men listened to me, verse 21, and waited and kept silence for my counsel. After my words, they did not speak again, and my speech settled on them as dew. They waited for me as rain, and they opened their mouth wide as for the spring rain. And so again, he reflects. He said, oh, that I might have that time. Again, it gives us also, does it not, some insight on all the things beside the material goods and his children, by the way, that he took away. God took away everything. Or he was allowed everything to be taken away from him. Wow. Amazing. And Job is pouring out his heart here on the things that he had that were now gone. You know, there's one element, too, I think that we need to understand, folks, is that we do need to live in the present. And that's exactly what chapter 30 does. So Job reflects in chapter 29 on his past life. In chapter 30, Job laments the present, however. He laments the present. And we can understand why. He has five complaints, and they correspond or they're in contrast to the joys that he once experienced. And we're going to skip down, verses 1 through 15. And I'm going to summarize it for you. He says, I have no respect. I have no respect. He says in verse 1, but now they mock at me, men younger than I, whose fathers I disdain to put with the dogs of my flock. And so he goes on down all the way to verse 15. talking about the fact that I have no respect, something else that he lost. Isn't that interesting? And I find it interesting on in another vein as well. Isn't it interesting how men will sit back, and as we've seen, but they will judge. And again, when someone is going through a hard time, they will begin to judge and criticize. And maybe even forsake. And that's exactly what happened. All the respect, all the friends, all the things that he had, they looked back and they looked at that as some sort of problem on his part or some sort of judgment from God. And in essence, they said, okay, Job, you know what? We're going to have nothing more to do with you. Now, I've said this and I want to repeat it, not because I'm trying to beat a dead horse, but I want to reiterate this. Look, we as conservative Christians need to be careful in this area. And we had better be careful that we do not do the same. And when we see people that are having difficulties or problems, or their families are having difficulties and problems, we should never sit back and say, well, something must be wrong with them. Man, I wonder what they got going on in their life to cause all those difficulties. It's exactly the same attitude that Christ corrected in his disciples when his disciples looked at the blind man and said, you know, what, Lord, what sin caused this? And the Lord simply said, nothing. Nothing. And in essence, he taught them the principle that sometimes God allows things in people's life to ultimately reflect the glory of God. Even in suffering and the hardest things that we can imagine. I grew up across the street on campus. There was a family. Their young boy was a little older than I. His name was Tommy. And Tommy, I remember going to school one day, and as a young boy, I think he was about 11 or 12. He went to church, I believe, over at Hampton Park. And when I went to school the next day, they said, did you hear that Tommy died? And apparently he was, you know, milling around with the young people after church. And he collapsed and died of a cerebral hemorrhage. But the story is even more difficult than that because he had a brother. I did not know his brother, but his brother was around the same age, and he drowned in the university pool. And this family lost two young boys around the same age. I remember going with my parents to the funeral home and seeing young Tommy in the casket. And you know what his parents were doing? They were smiling. Incredible. And I was young. I don't remember how old I was, but that their response to the suffering has made an impact on me to this day. I'll never forget it. I'll never forget it. And I've thought about that so many times. They had a peace and a calmness, and I'm sure their hearts were broken because they had experienced it twice. But there was such a peace about them that I've never forgotten. And I say, when I think and I reflect upon that, I think, Lord, help me. Lord, help me to be like that in the times of trial, in the times of difficulty. Well, he says, I have no respect in verses 16 through 23. In essence, he is saying here, I have no blessing. And again, was that accurate? Well, in the whole scheme of things, probably not. But Job is, again, reflecting how he feels. He is pouring out his emotion before God. And you know what's very interesting, folks, is God never condemns Job, not one time, for pouring out his emotions and his heart and his feelings, inaccurate as they may be. He only says, Job, you need to understand some things, and we're going to get to those chapters. But he never condemns him for that. Look, folks, again, when we go through the difficulties, there is no sin in stating or asking God why. Did you know that? Sometimes we're afraid. And we're afraid that, well, God is going to, He is going to strike me with a lightning bolt from heaven if I ask Him, why are these things happening? No, that's not the case at all, because we're human and He knows that. Thank God that we're reminded by the psalmist. He says He knows our frame, that we are made of dust. God knows who we are. And we can ask that question legitimately. However, we need to understand He may not ever answer it. And we find a man here who never knew why, specifically, he allowed Satan to test him to the lengths that he did. He never understood it. He never knew it. And he went to his grave not knowing why, other than the fact that he had a more intense relationship with his God. He understood his God and probably loved his God even more than he ever had. That's what he came away with. What an interesting thing. Did he have blessings? Oh, yes, he did. But he says in verse 16, "And now my soul is poured out because of my plight. The days of affliction take hold of me." There are many Christians who can relate to that verse. Many, many Christians. And folks, I want to tell you something. They sit around us in this room tonight. And what I'm saying is let's be sensitive to one another. Every person you meet probably has some sort of burden that they're carrying. Every person. We oftentimes have wrong perceptions of people because of the things that we see. I was reading or studying in my, as I've mentioned to you several times recently, I'm still going through the Psalms very, very slowly. And I reached one of my all-time favorites the other day, which is Psalm 73. Man, I like that Psalm. And here's one. I call that psalm the deceit of envy. Because Asaph, the author of it, basically gives us in a very transparent way, he says, you know what? I almost gave up because I had the wrong perception of those from the outside, those of the ungodly, because it seems like they have everything and I have nothing. You ever have wrong perceptions like that? Or we can tie it in here. Lord, they have all of the blessings, and we who are trying to serve you, who are doing right, we don't have anything. And you know what, Lord? These wicked, ungodly people, they don't even die like we do. That's almost a humorous verse when I read that in that psalm. He says, Lord, they don't even die like we do. Well, of course, you know how that psalm is resolved, because he said, until I went into the sanctuary or the presence of God, then understood I their end. And many times we will not understand things until you and I have these moments with just you and your Lord. Just you and Him. When he went into the presence of God, by the way, that doesn't mean he was attending church faithfully. Now, that's a good thing to do, and we should all do it, but that's not what that verse means. He was in communion, and he was in the presence of God, and then the Lord spoke to his heart, and guess what? His sight, his attitude, everything changed. And he admits that. He says, man, all my perceptions were wrong. And you begin to understand that. Well, I was going through that the other day, and it ties in here because at this point, Job is to the point, and we can certainly We can certainly sympathize with what he's going through or has gone through, and we can understand why he is where he is. He says, I have no blessings. I'm afflicted. He was discouraged. And it seemed like everybody else had all the blessings. And you know what? I think we run into that even in our own day. And you know, listen folks, I'm not going to get on a hobby horse here at all. But look, I think social media fuels that. You know? Social media fuels that because some people, we have to be objective about it. Some people look at it and say, man, I wish I had a life like that. I wish I could do that. I wish I could be that. And Lord, it seems like they've got this and I don't have what I really... And so we start comparing ourselves among ourselves. That's not a good thing to do. And it seems as if sometimes, again, and especially when we look at the celebrity culture of our day, or we look at the athletes and we look at all those things, it seems like, man, they've got so much. They've got all that the world offers. And Lord, here I am. I'm trying to serve you and... And so we begin, and the devil, he keeps whispering that. He says, yeah, look at that. You're trying to do what's right, and you don't have nothing compared to them. So he starts whispering those lies, and he starts whispering them over and over again, and we start to believe it, and it starts to change our attitude, doesn't it? Well, as I was again going through that, I began to think, that's not true. All these people, it seems like they have, as you know, we might word it this way, they've got the world by the tail. Have you heard that statement before? They've got it all. I thought, and some of you know this better than I because you live more in that era than I did, but I thought of the Kennedy family. Historically, they are a good example of what I'm talking about. It's interesting that the Kennedy family is still referred to, or their time, or their family, that whole thing is called Camelot. And every time I see that, I think it was nothing of the sort. It never was, and it never has been. It's one of the greatest myths of American history. For if you begin to study anything about the Kennedy family, you talk about a family that has been saturated with tragedy. It's almost overwhelming. But the world looks at the Kennedys as, wow. They had it, man, that is it. Okay? And the media did a good job back in the early 60s as promoting that idea. Look, man, they're good looking. They've got riches. They've got fame. They've got all of these things. And again, you start to study the history of the Kennedy family. There is not one Kennedy who was not touched by some sort of tragedy. Not one. And it is sad and it is tragic. And yet, the perception is that, wow, they've got it all. No. Everybody around us, look, saved and unsaved alike, are carrying many, many burdens. Many heartaches and many things that they're going through. And when you rub shoulders with people out in the world that we call it, look, you've got people out there who are going through things for which you never know what they're going through. So again, I want to remind you of my yearly admonition. When you go to Walmart in the next few days to pick up those last-minute Christmas stocking stuffers, and everybody's being rude, people aren't in a good mood, and there's only one cashier, and people are getting upset because they're standing in line for so long, and everybody's irritable. Can I just say this? I want you to keep in mind that, and if somebody's rude to you, keep in mind they may be going through some very hard, difficult things this season. Christmas time is very hard for some. And maybe they are estranged from a family member. Maybe they've lost a family member during the Christmas season. Maybe things are unraveling for them during this season. We do not know. But we do know that every human carries the burdens upon his back. And we do as well. The thing that is different for you and I as believers is this. Is that when those burdens are heavy, we have that wonderful, wonderful promise of God that is related to us by the apostle that says, casting all your care upon Him. Why? Say it with me. For He cares for you. I think that's one of the greatest truths in all of the Bible. And the word casting, by the way, means to throw. It's to throw them upon Him. And my question is for you as a believer, are you carrying them or casting them? And many times we keep them. And then we get irritated again for those who may not know Christ because they too are carrying burdens. And keep in mind, Christian, that the biggest difference is we know where to turn, they don't. Be sensitive to them. Let me give you, my time is gone. We're going to have to come back here. But let me give you the third lament that Joseph had. And this takes us all the way down to verse 24. So he says, first of all, I have no blessing. He says, I have no respect. And again, verses 24 and 25, he says, I have no help. Isn't that sad? He says, I have no help. He says in verse 24, surely he would not stretch out his hand against a heap of ruins. If they cry out when he destroys it, have I not wept for him who is in trouble? Has not my soul grieved for the poor? And he goes on to speak of these things. As he has already stated, he felt alone and had no help. And sometimes you feel that way, don't you? And we all do. And we might be here saying tonight, well, Pastor, I know what you're saying and I agree with it, that we can cast our cares upon the Lord. I know all those things. But I want something and someone tangible in which to talk to. Well, my friends, look. I will say this. You can't have anybody closer to you than the Holy Spirit of God. And you know why? Because He indwells you. That's about as close as you're going to get. And so this idea that, well, I've just got to have some person to talk to. Now look, I am not saying that that's not important and we need that. But what we find often is that human help ultimately is not going to be the answer that's going to resolve everything. And sometimes, as important as that is, and as wonderful as that may be, look, it comes, the peace of heart and mind comes when we have these moments with just you and God. With just you and God. And so we need to understand that. Warren Wiersbe said, the past, as we reflect on, as he reflects on it, and the present for that matter, but he says, the past must be a rudder to guide us and not anchor us to hold us back. If we try to duplicate today what we experienced yesterday, we may find ourselves in a rut that robs us of maturity. That's pretty good. And so we can't long and say, well, Lord, if I could just go back. Us older people, we have a tendency to do that, don't we? We have a tendency to say, man, you know, I wish we could turn back the clock. And I'm guilty of saying that. especially when it comes to cell phones. Okay. But you know what? Let me tell you this tonight, Christian. God has us right where He wants us. Right at this time, right in this year, right in this place. And we need to understand that. Well, we're going to continue here, but before we do, I want to very quickly tonight, if you'll bear with me, I want to learn a song that we may sing more than once during this series, and we gave you the words to that song, that hymn. And I stumbled across these words as I was preparing for this. And this comes from a 17th century hymn written by Samuel Radagast. He lived from 1649 to 1708. Now, what's very interesting, by the way, too, is that some of the words that we find in this hymn were actually used by none other than Johann Sebastian Bach in some of his cantatas. And so it's very interesting. And more than one, Bach used it here. But the first, I'm just going to read you the first stanza. He says, and of course, the title of it is, "Whate'er My God Ordains Is Right." Whate'er my God ordains is right, His holy will abideth. I will be still whate'er He doth and follow where He guideth. He is my God, though dark my road. He holds me that I shall not fall. Wherefore to Him